Well, next we turn our attention from old wax records made in the Northeast a century ago to what I think is some hot wax laid down here in L.A., a little more recent than that. Chris Strachowicz has spent a lifetime recording authentic traditional and vernacular music wherever he can find it. Chris is the founder of Arhuli Records and the Arhuli Foundation. And here at ARSC, where his life's work is held in the highest esteem, Chris really needs no introduction. So here he is, Chris Strachowicz. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. And in regard to cylinders, the only comment I have is that some of the most amazing cylinders were made of Mexican music around 1904 to 1908, just before the Mexican Revolution. And if any of you have any of those that are marked corridos, I would love to find them, especially one about Ignacio Parra, which apparently was issued on two cylinders. But they are just like gone with the wind. And this brings me to the fact that I think in part of the program, it was announced I'm supposed to speak on recording of the history of recording ethnic music in Los Angeles. On the other hand, it was said Mexican music. Well, I discovered there wasn't really much ethnic music recorded in Los Angeles, except for enormous amounts of Hawaiian music. So I'm going to give you one example of a wonderful thing that really presents the crossover between Hawaiian music and hot jazz from the early 30s. Thanks to Dick Spotswood for bringing this item to my attention. I didn't have it. So Malcolm Rockwell, who lives in Hawaii, who is the, is he the grandson or son of Mr. Rockwell, who did a lot of the OK recordings back in the 20s, and he supplied it to us. Thanks to him, as it was Andy Iona, he was the trumpet player on that session. I have no idea who the steel guitarist was. But anyway, let's get on with documenting Mexican music, because that was by far the largest group of ethnic minority at that time. I believe they were still a minority, to come, and they came largely due to the fact that the Mexican Revolution, which really not only started in 1910, but didn't really end halfway by 1920. So many, many thousands came during that period of the Mexican Revolution. came here to this country just to escape the terror and the total disarray of everything in Mexico. And one of the very first recordings I could find recorded here in Los Angeles was in 1923. Apparently, nobody had recorded Mexican music until then on this side of the border. And this was done by a trio. I have no idea whether these are their first names or their last names, More, Ruby, and Vivo, with the corrido Historia y Muerte de General Pancho Villa. And so he was the main figure, of course. Interesting. No, this was by a trio, and people in San Antonio told me that during the 1920s, it was very popular to have trios sing in this fashion, where one voice screams at a really high pitch on top of the other two. Of course, after that, once records became widely available and you could hear just duet singers, duets really became the style of music that delivered Mexican songs at that time, leaving out orchestras and so on. The next selection I'm coming to is from 1926. It's from May 11th of 1926. But to me, it sounds still acoustic. It's a Victor recording by, pardon?
You were going to talk about record stores.
Oh, record stores. Oh, that's of course. without stores, there wouldn't be any way to sell them. And of course, our wonderful friend, one of the Bahari brothers, was very much aware of that fact that you had to find your market. And these large companies, of course, found people who could operate and sell the discs in whatever areas. And in Los Angeles, they all established this one particular shop that, beginning with the acoustic records, was the place that was selling records, Mexican records, here in Los Angeles. And I think we have a number of, Mr. Calderon was the owner and operator, and in his catalog he was prominently featured with his photograph. But it was and the illustrations, it's just gorgeous. I just love these old catalogs. They are, and many of them would not only present Columbia Records, this store actually carried all of them. I think for a time they tried to limit. If Victor had one outlet, they would say, you can only sell Victor records. But I think Mr. Calderon, especially in the later 20s, they were selling all of them, Brunswick, Vocalions, Victor's, OK, no matter what the firm that was presenting them. Anyway, one of the recording stars of that time is a woman named Elisa Beruman, who only made one record. And she later became, I think, a well-known theatrical performer, and she obviously toured. And I believe very strongly that this is going to be her version of Mal Hombre, which is about, it's a very powerful woman's song, really. It's about how evil men are, how they leave you in the dirt, how they take advantage of you. And of course, Lydia Mendoza made a huge hit with it in 1934 when she recorded it. But let's listen to Elisa Beruman, who I believe Lydia must have heard at a theater in Monterrey, Nuevo León, because she said her dad took her to a theater there, and that's where she heard the song, and she had the words written out on a piece of gum wrapper. but she had never heard the melody. And when she heard this woman sing, she got the melody from her.
Era yo una chiquilla todavía cuando tú casualmente me encontraste y merced a tus artes de mundano de mi honra el perfume te llevaste. Luego hiciste conmigo lo que todos, lo que son como tú con las mujeres. Por lo tanto lo extrañas yo ahora y en la cara te diga lo que eres. Mal hombre, tan ruin es tu alma que no tiene nombre. Eres un canalla, eres un malvado, eres un mal hombre.
She sings it certainly in a sort of a lighthearted manner, but anyway, that was a style that was still mostly accepted, because what's coming now, what's coming next, is the phonograph records. Of course, you could hear the voices of people very clearly. At a theater, you had to really project and, I guess, really sing very loud and strongly. The first recording artists that they found here in the Los Angeles area, I believe they all came from Mexico originally. Hermanos Banuelos, they were two brothers, and they had the kind of voices that really projected the corridos of the Mexican Revolution. They recorded a lot of these corridos. Corridos are narrative ballads that really tell true stories. Today, the corrido has sort of been degraded because it's basically nothing but narco corridos that is dealing with the whole business of the scourge that's on Mexico. But in those days, and still going on, that we have real true stories and people complaining about certain things. Anyway, let's listen to Los Hermanos Banuelos, Adios Estados Unidos, goodbye United States, and they're being deported back to Mexico. They had powerful voices, and it was crying style that really people very much like to hear. You also hear the steel guitar becoming very, very popular. I think this is in the late 20s, and they used those. The next one we're going to come to is fascinating. I'd like somebody to pass these out to anybody who wants a copy of this. This is called the Corrido, the Dishwasher, and it was composed by a fellow named Osorio, who is actually the singer on this record. This is the original version of it by the composer Osorio y Camacho. His partner was Camacho. El Lavaplatos, the dishwashers, how he dreamed about. Anyway, you will be able to read the lyrics of it. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
Soñaba ya en mi juventud ser una estrella del cine, y un día de tantos me vine a visitar Hollywood. Un día muy desesperado de tanta revolución, me pasé para este lado sin pagar la emigración. Qué vacilada, me pasé sin pagar nada. Al llegar a la estación me trompecé con un cuate que me hizo la invitación de trabajar en el traque. Yo el traque mientras que me suponía que sería algún almacén.
As you can see, if you have the copy of it, nothing has really changed. Absolutely nothing, and it's rather a sad situation. Well, I don't have really the time to go into it, but in the previous one, I think Dan Guerrero is going to join us during the second part of this program, whose father actually went back to Mexico during this time when the it was really during the Depression when, of course, people here decided, well, we don't need Mexicans anymore, let's send them all back. And a lot of people, even who were actually Americans, because he had simply had a Spanish surname, were deported. And I just hope that this will never happen again. Let's go on. This is the beginning of radio, of course, was in the late 20s. And a man named Pedro J. Gonzalez, he was a very revolutionary guy. He was a very interesting person. He had been brought up under Pancho Villa. He was a telegraph operator during the revolution. And he was able to get a radio program going, presenting Mexican music. And the group that he formed were called Los Madrugadores, the early risers who get up early in the morning when the people have to go to work. And that is when the programs came on, very early in the morning. And he not only did the usual thing of, just advertising products and goods and so forth, but he also was a strong labor organizer. And this really upset the officials here. And he was eventually accused of, I think, rape and taking a woman across the state line or something. He was sent to San Quentin, and he didn't really get out until, I think, the early, the mid-40s. It was a real sham, but he was a very, very aggressive labor organizer. And let's listen to one of his groups. They were called Los Hermanos Sánchez y Linares. They were known as Los Madrugadores, but one of the groups were the Sánchez brothers and a fellow named Linares. And they did this corrido about Joaquin Murrieta, who, of course, is this legendary bandit, but he really was very upset in the middle of the 1800s against the gringos, because during the gold rush, all the Mexicans were denied access to that whole area, and it was a really disgusting scenario.
Era un niño, huérfano a mí me dejaron. Nadie me hizo ni un cariño, a mi hermano lo mataron, ni a mi esposa Carmelita, cobardes la asesinaron.
It's quite extraordinary of how popular Los Madrugadores were, and Pedro J. Gonzalez actually had two different groups, almost like a society orchestra, you know, that would have an A band and a B band and a C band. Depending how wealthy you were, they would come and play for you. Well, I think Pedro J. Gonzalez also had this, so if you were able to hire the Madrugadores, you will get the Hermanos Sánchez and Linares, and otherwise you get Chicho and Chencho, I believe, were the other group that were called Los Madrugadores. Let's go to one of the orchestras that was recorded here. They're called Banda Chihuahua, so I guess they came to Los Angeles from Chihuahua, probably from Juarez, and they do this intriguing thing called La Negra. You will, I think, hear how influenced they were by American music.
Thank you.
again, the Hawaiian guitar, and wasn't that sort of the black and white variety? What do you think it sounds like? Yeah, it's a combination of various sort of ragtime numbers, I think. I want to give you a little short piece by the most popular girl duet that recorded in the mid, began recording in the mid-30s, and I just have to give you a little taste of them because they were very smooth. They became the huge hit, Las Hermanas Padilla, and they were unfortunately accompanied by Mr. Acuña. Did you ever meet Mr. Acuña? Yes, Manuel Acuña. But he was a very well-educated musician, and he directed many of these orchestras. He called them the Los Costeños. Unfortunately, to my ears, they were sort of mousy. I mean, they weren't really a mariachi, and they weren't really an authentic group. But anyway, here's one of their recordings.
Al puerto donde se halla la barca de oro que debe conducirme, yo ya me voy. Solo vengo a despedirme. Adiós, mujer, adiós para siempre, adiós.
Very smooth 30s style. By 1937, mariachi music was very much in vogue as far as the ranchero music goes in Mexico. But here, apparently, Mr. Acuña didn't really like the real mariachi, so he tried to make it a kind of a pleasant orchestral combination. He was very successful in selling this kind of music. Now, in the post-war era, which we're coming to now, the main label was Azteca Records. They were formed, and from the beginning, they were smart enough to hire one of the most amazing trumpet players, Rafael Mendez, who played in the Los Angeles Philharmonic, and he also could play almost any kind of music. And let's listen to him opening this selection for a singer named Fernando Rosas. Oh, he will play the muted trumpet intro to this song, which is a bolero. Oh, we can't get it? Oh, it doesn't. Oh, what a shame. Well, we'll have to try. It doesn't work, huh? Okay, computers seem to fail. Okay, sorry, we can't hear. So we're going to have to. He played a beautiful muted.
I got it.
Oh, you got it. Okay. This was his orchestra.
Palabras de mujer,
and backing this singer.
Cerca de ti,
beautiful orchestral tradition. It's of course a huge one too in the Mexican music field. I'm just touching on a few things. It's a varied, varied scene. And the next one, he's going to be playing with the Mariachi Azteca. And again, the good owner of Azteca Records was smart enough to hire him because he was able to do it all, and he do it beautifully. Here he is accompanying the Duetto Azteca, María en y Memo, with the amazing
Azteca
hit song called
Azteca 290, matrix number PM-189-2, Sabor de Engaño,
okay.
Liria Mendoza.
Oh, what's, wait a minute.
That didn't sound right.
No, you got the wrong record.
The wrong one. All right, forget that one.
This is, the one I'm hoping for is Azteca number 260. You don't have it. Okay, sorry, we're going to have to skip him, but he was awfully good at playing pure mariachi music. So we're going to go to end this part of the program with one of my very favorite sounds of all times, that is women duettos. And these are the two sisters of the great Lidia Mendoza, Juanita and Maria Mendoza, and they recorded tons of records for the Azteca label. Lidia actually accompanies them on the 12-string guitar. Here they are. Oh, come on, play it. Corazón Mexicana. Mexicana. Oh, shoot. Visiting from Texas and recorded enormous amounts here.
Tengo el corazón bien puesto a la izquierda de mi pecho para amar y padecer. Solo este hecho a mí me anima, pues un trapo de cocina, eso nunca lo he de ser. Verdad que tuve calma, pues te quise con el alma como nunca lo has de ver. Pero tanto tú me hiciste que por fin me decidiste en tenerte que perder. Porque yo soy noble y sincero, mi corazón sabe ser fuerte. Cuando me doy entero. Cuando me voy pa' siempre.
Las hermanas Mendoza, the Mendoza sisters. Well, that was much more the Norteño style from Texas and northern Mexico. But anyway, that gives you a brief overview of sort of what was recorded in the field of Mexican music. I'd like to now turn to the second part of the program, where I want to deal with the greatest of all the singers dealing with Mexican American and Mexican music here in Southern California. And his name was Lalo Guerrero. I'm going to start with one of his first compositions, wasn't it? A Canción Mexicana. No, no. This is Mexico's very first real ranchera singer, Lucha Reyes, singing his composition, Canción Mexicana.
Hoy que lleno de emociones me encuentro con mi jarana. Voy a rendir homenaje a la Canción Mexicana. Voy a rendir homenaje a la canción más galana, la canción más primorosa. La canción mexicana. Pa' hacer pesos de a montones no hay como el americano. Pa' conquistar corazones no hay mejor que un mexicano.
Por Dios que sí.
¿Y cómo es que los consigues si no cantan? Canciones como es el cielito lindo que alegra los corazones.
Okay, she certainly was an incredibly gutsy singer, and she had some classical training, but she certainly turned it around. Anyway, I will never say it again that classically trained people can't sing real folk music. But I'd like to bring up Lalo's son, Dan Guerrero, at this time. Would you mind coming up here and helping me out? And
go on the outside.
Yeah, you have to.
I've done stages before. I know how to get on stage.
Oh, okay. Oh, what's it? There's all these funny wires sitting out there.
Not sure what I'm going to do, but
great.
So my whole life was flashing before my eyes there. Did you know Rafael Mendez, who was an amazing trumpet player, he was kidnapped by Pancho Villa, you know.
Oh, really?
When he was like 10. I directed a piece for the LA Opera based on his life. And when he was 10, Pancho Villa came through the village, and he loved music, as you know, and he needed a cornet player. He took the kid. And he literally, Rafael Mendez went through most of the Mexican Revolution with Pancho Villa.
I had no idea. I guess I hadn't really studied him.
It's a fascinating life, but not as fascinating as my dad's. Let's cut to my dad.
Yeah, because your dad, he started out singing very traditional, the way it was in the 30s with a trio. And why don't we, shall we give him a little sample of the Carlistas, which was his first recording group?
Sure, but I think first, if we can do, if you don't mind, sure. How it came about, because he became known as the father of Chicano music, because he was of that first generation. He was born in Tucson, Arizona, of Mexican-born parents, 1916, like in the middle of the revolution. And so, like so many cities and towns here in the States, in the Southwest, at home, they were growing up, it was Mexico. Their neighborhood was Mexico, you know? They were Mexican, even though he was an American. And so when they got to school, oh, hey, guess what? we're not Mexican. We are Mexican, we're not Americans. So he was in that first generation that grew up with, you know, kind of straddling that fence that really we still do today. And so that carried into his music. So that all these little bits and pieces you're gonna hear, that he wrote La Canción Mexicana, he wrote like, you know, in his late teens, maybe he was 19 or 20, and it was because he loved Mexican music, and it was kind of an ode to Mexican music. So you'll see as you hear these things how he brought American music to Spanish language, starting in the late 30s.
Correct. Let's hear a little bit of the Carlistas. This was Lalo, was a member of it.
In Tucson.
This is again Manuel's little group that he called Los Costeños. This was sort of the house band of Vocalion Records.
Y de que murió el quemado, mi bien, dime no más sino de puro ardor. Pa' que vienes y me dices también que tienes otro y mejor. Para hacerte esta pregunta, mujer, hasta me sobra el valor. ¿Y de qué murió el quemado, sino de puro ardor?
He was the lead singer, was he?
He was the lead singer. That was back in Tucson, his group Los Carlistas. And
We're now going to the era of the beginning of the whole Pachuco era. I think he was
in L.A. by then.
He was in Los Angeles. I think the whole pattern, they tell me, started in El Paso, Texas.
Yes, that's where the Pachuco thing started. But in between these two little eras, as you brought up, the repatriation. Oh, yeah. And during the Depression, my grandfather took them all to Mexico, which pissed off all the kids who were there in their early teens because that was a foreign country. They were Americans, you know? But they went down there because there would supposedly the economy was better. And they all came back because they didn't want to live there because it was just foreign to them. But what my dad came back with, he was saying that at that time, you know, think how far away Mexico City was at that time, and even radio and stuff. So all the music, Mexican music they heard was mostly from the border and from the northern part, and that trip to Mexico City opened up a whole new world of other music for him.
But when he came here, he was immediately engulfed by the whole Pachuco movement, and he lived in the barrio, I'm sure, where the kids all spoke this calo, what they call it, this kind of dialect and slang. And in this next selection, you will hear him speak some of that in the middle. It's called El Pachuco y El Tarzan. Apparently, Tarzan was a legendary creature who came from Mexico, and the Pachuco and Tarzan met in El Paso, apparently. Yeah. Anyway, let's listen to this.
He had a very bizarre sense of humor. That's not it. That's Marijuana Boogie.
What's the Marijuana Boogie? We won 208.
What happened is during this period, because he was living in the two worlds, he loved swing, but he wasn't going to be singing with the Dorsey group or anything like that. So he took swing to Spanish and recorded a whole slew of these songs about pachucos, which Luis Valdez years later used in the play Zoot Suit. So that's when he wrote Marijuana Boogie.
Yeah, maybe we should play that first. Can you find it after that? That's a shame. Well.
Oh, well.
That's okay, let's play a little of the Marijuana Boogie.
Right, maybe this will be it. You'll never know.
What's that?
No, that's Marijuana Boogie.
Okay.
Marijuana, Marijuana Boogie. Marijuana, Marijuana Boogie. Marijuana, that's my baby's name. Póngase alerta ese vato, no se vaya al rol. Porque va a empezar al rato el piano del cantón. Porque va a empezar al rato el marihuana boogie boy.
That's Pete Alcaraz on the piano. Pete Alcaraz.
No se agüite después, pégale duro esas teclas. Vamos pues a tronarnos las manos, digo yo.
That man in the black shirt wants to dance, don't you? I can see you. He's like, he wants to get up and dance.
Me voy a sacar una buena vena para echar un buen polvo ese. Con esta bota de aquella este boogie.
By the way, this is on the Imperial label. It was really the only American label here in Los Angeles that recorded Mexican music widely. They started with folk dance music. There was a huge, in the 40s and 50s, huge audience for folk dance records. And then they discovered that there was a similarity to some of the Mexican things because the folk dancers liked certain Mexican dances. And so he decided, well, what the heck, this is a great business. And apparently Lalo Guerrero became one of his main artists that continued. And who was the, was it also Manuel Acuña who was the, you know?
I don't know if Manuel was there that early, he might have been. He started with the Trio Imperial, named obviously after the label, and then they asked him to go solo. So my dad's first big solo hit was Pecadora, Agustin Lara's, in 1949, still on Imperial.
Well, unfortunately, we'll have to leave the Pachuco thing alone for the because we can't find that one. But Lalo was interested in so many different happenings that were going on. And when Cesar Chavez started the Farm Workers Union, and we had this big march in the Central Valley, he did this really extraordinary corrido about the march to Delano. Let's listen to some of that. This is from the 70s, I guess.
60s,
that's right, the 60s.
It's very typical corrido, the arrangement.
Año del 65-66, más o menos. Se levantó nuestra gente en los campos de Deleno, pidiendo mejores sueldos por trabajar el terreno. Estado de California, en el condado de Kern, se escucharon las
las palabras. Ándale, paisano, ven a ingresar al sindicato. Nos irá mucho más bien. Porque salimos en huelga.
No es
para que el mundo se asombre. Esto lo decía un joven. César Chávez es su nombre. Solo pedimos lo justo y la dignidad del hombre.
So he did a lot of these very political songs at the time. This was, again, you know, it was a struggle.
Well, I produced a documentary on my dad that aired on PBS, and Dolores Huerta talks about the, who co-founded the Farm Workers Union with Caesar, and she talks about that in their earliest, darkest days when this song came out, it was the first thing to get their message out, and they got tremendous followers and everything. That's the whole point of a corrido, to keep those stories alive about an incident, about a person.
And it tells a story. Well, it's so difficult to cover this incredible man's career in 20 minutes, but let's go on to another side of him, a totally different side, and this is his wonderful sense of humor and singing in English. This is a song he called Tacos for Two.
It's a parody of the song Cocktails for Two.
Yeah.
In English, because he said he was trying to cross over in the 30s, and in 2005 he said, I'm still trying.
Down in a Mexican cafe, that's where I met my love one day. It was a romantic rendezvous, and as she sighed, she ordered tacos for two. The darn tortilla was too hard, and it was dripping so much lard. Her eyes ablaze, and then I knew the sauce was hot on our tacos for two. Our hearts were burning, but it wasn't from the yearning. So we both reached for the water, 'cause our faces red were turning. And by the flickering candlelight, we sat and suffered through our plight. And it was rough, I'm telling you, to sit and chew those tacos for two.
Well, it was so much better. I hate to say that. I don't know.
I like Mickey Katz. I did.
Well, well, we're coming to another phase, yet he had another phase. Somehow, there was this record out by Chipmunks in this country that was a huge hit. I forgot the name of it, but whatever it was.
Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Alvin and the Chipmunks, yeah. Well, somebody, it was either your dad or the guy at Colonial Records, I'm not sure, who decided to have him do this type of thing.
It's a very long story. I won't go into it. I do know how it happened, but anyway.
Well, why don't we play him a little bit of it first? This is Las Ardelitas in Navidad.
They became squirrels in Spanish as opposed to chipmunks. The thing is, he did, over a period of 25 years, he did 25 albums. Usually every Christmas one would come out. And through all of Latin America, most people know him for these bloody little squirrels. More than they do about everything else he did. It's true.
Pánfilo, ya vas a empezar otra vez. Way quiere decir camino. Es una palabra en inglés. All the way quiere decir todo el camino.
Oh, así ya cambia. No más, no se enoje.
Ya déjate de tonterías. Ándale, pórtate bien, vamos a cantar.
Ya vienen los climax, ya viene Navidad.
Anyway, this man was really extraordinary. Why don't we tell you a little bit about how this happened? This label actually was owned by your dad and Mr. Acuna,
yes,
wasn't it? Colonial,
yes,
Records.
Because believe it or not, my dad's first recording was like in the late 30s, and his last one was with Ry Cooder in 2005, 2006, something like that, right, where he re-recorded one of the Pachuco songs from the 40s. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what the hell did you ask me?
Well, how did they get to this chipmunk business? But well, is that too long a story? Maybe we should...
Well, he claims that he was playing around one day, and he actually wrote a song about the Martians, Marcianos, Un Marciano en la Tierra, and that made him think about little animals. So he claims that the Alvin, he preceded Alvin, but I suspect not. Now, I don't think so. I think he was just covering his butt.
Could be. Well, I know I... Thank God I got to know him and meet him, and he played with a wonderful group up in Northern California, Los Senzontles, young women who've been trying to present traditional Mexican music, not only through their performances, but also the Senzontles Center teaches youngsters in the Richmond, San Pablo area how to dance, how to sing, and all this kind of thing in the traditional manners. It's a wonderful organization, and Lalo Guerrero was deeply involved with them. They made a record together, and he was just into everything.
Well, you know what he always said, that I just write about what I see, you know, but in terms of to the Mexican-American and to the Chicanos, he documented our history and song, I mean, through, you know, 5, 6, 7 decades. It was a very long career, and that's why he was very beloved, not just because people like his music, but because of what he did, you know.
Well, I guess we're probably supposed to
wrap up.
Bring this
These
wrap
people
up.
Get fed. They've been in here for hours. Not even a cookie. They had chips with coffee in there. What's that about? Am I wrong? Come on, give us a cookie.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Not even guacamole, just chips.
It's just chips.
Thank you very much.
Okay, are there any questions people have? Wait a second, let's see. Here.
Any questions? You want to know if there's any questions? One or two questions? Yeah, they know everything they ever wanted to know.
Anybody? Nobody? Nope. Okay.
Thank you.
Last call. Thanks again.